Get ready to innovate and organize your workspace with Metro. As the industry leader in storage and distribution systems, Metro is here to transform and organize your kitchen. With their premium solutions, you'll experience the Metro difference. Metro's sturdy and versatile shelving units, workstations, holding cabinets, and utility carts are designed to streamline operations and maximize your productivity. Don't settle for imitators. Metro products last longer and offer unparalleled quality and durability. Plus, the many customization options ensure that your space is tailored to your unique needs. Hey, we use them here at Walk and Talk. Say goodbye to chaos and hello to order with Metro Shelving. Visit their website or contact them today to start designing your perfect space. Metro Shelving, your partner in organization and efficiency. Food fam, this is the Walk and Talk podcast, where you will find the perfect blend of food, fun, and cooking knowledge. I'm your host, Carl Fiadini. Welcome to the number one food podcast in the country. We're recording on site at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive, and I get to eat it. First things first, last week we had author Matt Haynes on the podcast. If you missed it and you're intrigued by all things Mardi Gras and King Cakes, go back and check it out. And also be sure to check out our Instagram, LinkedIn, or Facebook. You got to get your eyeballs on the fabulous photography. You'll find those handles in the description. We've got four amazing dishes to highlight today. It's going to be a really good time. Oh, yeah, I just did that. But you're... The ground veal stuffed shells are top notch. Thank you, Peninsula Food Service, for supplying the proteins for this productione today. Chefs in the Central Florida area, Peninsula is the largest distributor of Creekstone Farms beef in the Southeast United States, complete with a fully staffed butcher shop to help you solve your kitchen inconsistencies. Check out their dry aged program too. Okay, so our guest this week is journalist, food writer, and Walk and Talk podcast contributor, Amy Drew Thompson. She'll be getting into the Orlando Sentinel's Foodie Awards and something about some Tijuana tacos. Stay tuned. Jeff, baby, you know what to do. Pop the clutch and get into that pre-shift. Let's get to the explanations, brother.
Not a problem. So the reason why we came up with the theme today, which was basically simple.
No theme.
Yeah, for me it was. It was called Simple and Elegant.
Right.
My theme was crisis cooking, 10 minutes or less, because I was out of town this past week until yesterday. That's why I sound this way, trying to still recover from it. But we did four different ones. We did a breakfast. So we took some breakfast sausages, ground them up a little bit, and hit it with some sherry wine, made a nice... thick, would give you a nice big hug type of sausage gravy. Then we took some biscuit dough, then had a mini waffle maker, put them in the waffle, and then some fried chicken tenders and layered that through. And then this was the kicker. I think it was like 2 weeks ago, I was at the Lakeland Farmers Market, and there was somebody from Vermont, and they had a whiskey-infused maple syrup. I'm like, sold. So I put that around it, had some sage as the garnish, had some fried sage actually inside the sauce, so it had some layers to it. The next dish was, the old classic. You're in one chicken Florentine, which is just basically spinach and cheese, throw it on a piece of chicken and bake it off, but kind of raise that level, raise the roof a little bit with some like bacon. So I had maple bacon inside it. We had gran panado, what was the soft cheese I used? Provolone. And then mozzarella. So I mixed that up together. So I had some lemon zest, and then I topped it off with some pesto. Zoodles was on the side, so the dish was completely carb-free. So it was really friendly for the keto or somebody was looking to not have so many carbs into it. And then I downshifted into being a chicken Wellington. Instead of being it normal, wrapped in the puff pastry, because that would take me more time, I actually cut out little rounds, utilized the puff pastries that way, kept them flat, and then did roasted chicken with crispy potato chips, sauteed vegetables, which was carrots. Then we did a broccoli puree, but I added a little more spinach to it, give it that vibrant color. And then I did a nice beef consomme reduction to it, but I added Marmite, so it gave it a little more bite to it. And then to give it some sweetness and some richness, like almost chocolate velvety, I added black garlic to it and then pureed that down. And then lastly, we did the veal bolognese. That one, that it, lemon zest. And this I got from going to a place called Bufalina, and it's in Austin, Texas. It was a James Beard finalist. And they did a scratchatelle toast. And I hit the tomato jam with the stretched, fresh stretched mozzarella. And there was such a pronounced lemon flavor that I just like, anything fatty is going to get this much lemon because you need that acid there. So it breaks everything down. It kind of brightens up your taste buds. And I did exactly that with this one. I have ricotta in there. I have gran panado. Oh, pecorino romano was the other cheese I had. And then we did some fresh mozz on top of that. And then a little bit of the tomato sauce on the bottom. Just roasted that baby off. It was fantastic. And you're lucky you're getting that because she's hungry.
I'm so hungry. I'm 10 times hungrier than I was when I sat down. I missed all of that. Yeah. I got here late today.
Well, you know what?
We know somebody.
You should show up earlier. Okay.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
Shots fired.
No, I'm kidding. All right. So I just want to give a little bit of, first of all, everything was really on point today.
Thank you.
Jefferson, you did it. Okay. Yeah. You did it. You've arrived. I'm just saying, like, you've... I don't know that you ever need to go to a professional kitchen ever again. You just show up here at the studio and cook here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's just for your belly.
Profitability and money be damned, right?
Like, right, exactly.
Success goes in the garbage. No, you did great. That puree is really good, and I'm taking it with me, by the way.
I told you to.
The bag I'm taking.
And there's like four ingredients. There's actually chives, spinach, broccoli, that's been pureed almost to like almost baby, a little just before it gets really too soft.
Yeah.
And then the spinach to brighten it up. Most of the time people use parsley, but the problem with too much chlorophyll, that will overtake as far as the flavor profile. Spinach is very neutral. Has a lot of chlorophyll in it, but it doesn't have that tendency to be that flavor profile of parsley. And parsley also, back in the day when I was going, back in my day, when we were going out, that was the garnish. It was like a lemon peel, and then half of it was dipped in the parsley, and then you had to wash the parsley out like until it was clear, and you had to look for a towel. You couldn't use a napkin, and then you would rip the towel. Thank God we don't do those anymore, but you go to like Marvin's Farm and get microgreens, and it's so much better.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I didn't want to do that, so I used the spinach. And then salt and pepper, and then a little garlic, and I blanched the garlic too.
Well, you did good today.
Thanks.
And you know who else did good today?
Me.
I ate well. I'm happy. No, I'm talking about John.
Oh, he always does.
I know. Well, he needs more more kudos out there.
Yeah.
100%. People, if you're listening and if you can hear the sound of my voice, in the description you're going to find John's Instagram. Give him instant, follow this man.
Give him instant love.
Yeah, give him instant love. Okay, I don't know if that's a thing, but.
Well, it is now, but we just started it. Just give him some instant love.
Give this guy instant love.
He's too talented not to be like number one out there.
True story. Let's talk about Amy for a second. So before I bring Amy actually onto the program, what she's going to be doing with the Walk and Talk podcast, obviously she's a writer, Orlando Sentinel. And, you know, her articles come out, and if she's going to do something and it's, you know, either coming up or just put out, you know, we're going to have her on the show and we're going to talk about it. And, you know, she does a lot of restaurants that you need to go to in the Central Florida area, Orlando area. And I just think that you got to pay attention out there. Pay attention, listen, follow along. All right.
Join me.
Speaking of joining me, Amy, welcome to the program.
I'm back, baby.
Yeah. Put him up.
Put him up. I love it. I wish everyone can see you right now with
the glasses.
With my
glasses.
Shades.
Yeah. The shades on.
Yeah. Yeah. I was out of town too. I was in New Orleans. Lost my glasses.
Yeah, I saw. I was stalking you on your page. I noticed that you posted from the French Quarter.
Yeah. I was off. Well, this time I was in the French Quarter more than usual because of Mardi Gras. I've been in New Orleans many times. This was my first Mardi Gras.
Oh, wow.
So
I've never been to Mardi Gras. I've been there. How was
it? Oh, yeah. It's hellacious and trashy and fun, and it's what you would imagine.
It's debauchery.
It's where you need to be, Jeff.
No, I don't need to be there. I've been there when it's not, and it's still debauchery when you're not.
Yeah, you can kind of live above it and, you know, be a little bit in it and then just sort of do your own thing, which is a little bit. But we hung out on a balcony. I threw people beads. It was, you know, it was a scene. It was a scene for sure.
Yeah, we brought that up on the last podcast. I'm in that space where I can, you know, receive beads.
You and I are definitely. Please don't lift your shirt.
Maybe I should take the food home today.
This body type isn't working out well.
Did you just hear what she said?
Yes.
Okay, I just kind of passed over. I want to bring you to make sure.
I just ignored that. Yeah.
It looks really good. Everything looks really good.
It looks like, if you listen seriously though,
I'm gonna stuff a stuffed shell in my mouth and then jet out of here.
That's when you get on your socials later, you're gonna see that's what I did. Basically, I do it for the video. All right, let's talk about the Foodie Awards. Right,
yeah,
that's happening like as we speak. As we're recording,
people are voting right now.
Talk about it.
The Orlando Sentinel Foodie Awards is. Way precedes me. This is, I think, the 27th year that they've done something like this. It's my fourth, but they're switching it up. It's a 50-category field, and it's a lot. It's a lot to digest, forgive the pun. And so this year they've decided, like, I should be asking for forgiveness. It's all I do is puns.
Have you heard his puns?
Yes.
So you don't have to forgive because of his.
Yes.
Like the veal pun that you did at the opening monologue?
Yeah, that was great.
It was really good.
Yeah. So this year they're breaking it up into four quarters. So it's fewer categories for people to nominate and the readers nominate. And then the top three in each category go on to a voting round, and one of them comes out on top. And that's what's going on right now. So the nominating time is over, and now we have our contenders in the reader's choice. And then I get to do my own choices. Those are the critics' picks. So I don't have anything to do. That's all readers, all...
Critics' picks. I voted already once. I have to do a little bit more myself.
Good. Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to go see who's in. Have you voted? Like, voted? You didn't nominate. You voted.
I voted.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's right?
She started out with the nominations, and then now they're in the voting right
Correct.
Now.
I did this like 2 days ago. So whatever that.
Yeah. Whatever. It started, I want to say yesterday was voting.
Then maybe I did a nomination.
Okay. Did you write a name of a restaurant in?
Yeah.
That you nominated.
That's called nomination.
Right.
Yeah.
So you did that.
Okay. Well, hey, look, and I just jumped in there.
Welcome. That's okay. I'm glad you're in. Welcome.
I saw your post.
Yes.
And I jumped in.
Yes. Jump in. And you know what? We'll be doing it again in another quarter. So you can go for another whole round. And this time you can nominate if you want every single day and help your favorite places rack up the nominations and hopefully make it to the top three. Because that's...
Yeah. And because I have a lot of friends out there in the business.
There you go.
I shall never tell.
You can build an army.
I'll never tell who I'm voting for. I keep it.
Yeah, well, that's your right.
Yeah.
The sacred right. Yeah, who you're voting for in the Foodie Awards.
Don't do right. Stop it. Stop.
Listen, you do it. I can do it too.
No, you can. Because I do it good. Okay.
That was still good.
It's a really, it's a fun contest. I think that people will talk about, you know, what I love to see is restaurants getting the love from the people who love them. And then I get to give love too. And we get a whole bunch of recommendations every quarter for people to try.
I think that's one of the things in the industry we need right now is that we need to show each other love more so than trying to break things down.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
And this is perfect.
I think everything, you know, you go to a restaurant row and the better the stuff that's out there, it's like you can't look at it as competition because nobody on that row is going to come to your restaurant every night. They're going to mix it up. Mm-hmm. So everybody, you know, all boats lifted. Rising tide lifts all boats. So I think that it's more like, yeah, there's a little bit of competition, I guess, but really overall, everybody makes the scene better. Everybody does better.
Yep.
I went out to dinner last night and, it's a decent place, but right next door, they're opening another nice, decent place. Right. And the servers, you know, we're talking about it with the server and we asked his thoughts, like, what do you think about it? He says, well, I just hope that we don't lose business over it. Now, this was an Italian restaurant, and across, literally across the walk path, was a is a high end Mexican concept. And I said, it's not. You know, these are completely two different food concepts. And it's a busy place, busy area. It's not going to affect you in any kind of way. If anything, it's going to bring more people in.
Yeah, and people come for tacos and they go, oh, hey, we should try that place.
Yeah.
You know, or they came for the tacos. Hey, I didn't know that place was there.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you don't know exactly what's going to happen, who's going to stay open. You know, what's the percentage of keeping a restaurant?
One in three fail in the first 3 years.
Yeah.
It's about 98% failure rate in the first 3 years.
It's tough. It's tough. So, yeah. So I think everybody, one of the nice things that I hear a lot about Orlando from other chefs who come from other places is that the camaraderie in our city, in the food scene, you know, between restaurant owners, between chefs, like everybody's supporting each other. They come and they come to each other's pop-ups. They go to each other's businesses. They post about each other's food. And it's nice.
Experience the perfect blend of culinary delights, entertainment, and education on the number one food podcast in the country, Walk and Talk Podcast. Join host Carl Fiadini and the amazing chef Jeffrey Schlissel. Feed your appetite. Find this podcast on Apple and Spotify.
Yeah, and it's in Tampa, too. I mean, now for me, going from West Palm Beach, when we had a lot of camaraderie down there, and we moved over last year, I'm starting to see that, you know, you're seeing different chefs that we've interviewed, and I, you know, talk to them, and I see who they're posting, if they go out to eat, because let's face it, everybody's working 6 days a week, and you want that one day in downtime to kind of recuperate, but they're showing a lot of love, and I think that's what we need to focus in on as the industry as a whole.
Yeah, especially since most of them are eating Fazoli's breadsticks on the way home from a shift, you know,
or Burger King,
yeah,
or
whatever. McDonald's, whatever your thing is.
Yeah.
Yep. It's funny you bring up Fazoli's, but it, you know, for me, it's a drive-through, because I don't want to be bothered. You know, yeah, I don't want to see anybody.
Just, I have to eat too much. I barely hit any. I generally only hit any kind of place like that when it's for a story, because I'm just eating all the time. For me, it's like I can get food fatigue.
Ooh. That's an interesting.
There's a little thing.
Yeah, we're going to have to come back to that.
That's like tipping and tipflation that we talked about, food fatigue.
Yeah. People are like, what do you want to eat? I'm like, can I just have some tea?
And on the other side of that, it's like, hey, what do you want to eat? I don't know. I just don't want to tip anymore. You know, it's
tip fatigue.
Tip fatigue. Yeah.
Yeah. We should have. I've been wanting to do a story about, you know, all of the weird. Everybody's doing things different now. The 20%, you know, auto gratuity, and do you want to add more?
Look. Wait. Hold on.
I'm not going to offer anything yet because I haven't done my research.
No. But I just want to put this out there into the universe, right? If you're a server and you get me as a guest and you hand me an electronic device to pay for the meal, walk away from me. They linger and they wait while you're doing the gratuity.
It's like your vote. You want to keep, you feel pressure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always going to feel pressure. Good. I am the least cheap person ever. Just get the hell away from me. Like, you're not allowed to stand up. Cause you know, I mean, listen, I was a server for a long time. That, you know, growing up, I did. You know, I was in the business, right?
Well, before that, we used to just leave it on the table.
You leave it on the table.
And you walk away.
You would never go back.
We didn't have the iPads.
iPads, but you would leave it. Like, if somebody did leave a, you know, they paid the card, whatever, it's there. They take their card back. You don't go back and pick up the check and to like walk away with or the cash and everything. You leave it there until they walk away. Then you go back and you collect your stuff and you see what, you know, what they left you. You don't do it beforehand, like when they're still finishing up their cocktail, their drink, and you walk by and you pick up that's so rude. Oh my goodness. Sorry, tangent.
It's okay. Non sequiturs happen. I can't wait to do the story now.
Okay. So,
well, I'll be honest with you, where the tipping issue came into a problem is when I was working in Miami and there was a restaurant that actually got caught tipping or putting a tip on a different two top. And not another two top, and it became this huge thing.
It wasn't, it was like on purpose. It wasn't an accident.
Yeah, it wasn't an accident. And the guy actually came out and said why, which was not really, you don't do that as an owner. And it got out and it went to the city council, and the city council said, if you're going to put a tip on it, it has to be for everyone or no one. So you had to make a decision right then and there. So if you put a tipping policy in Miami, it became law in the city of Miami that you have to leave it in and everyone gets tipped automatically, granted. So, and I can see where it comes from because of this story instance. So we're talking about 2001.
I have a nice piece of research to go look up now.
Yeah. We'll talk off air a little bit more about it because it's probably not the right platform to talk about it, but it's definitely something worth for your article. But that's where it started from in Miami.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
We'll definitely talk about
it. I will tell you that when we were at Bufalina, something that we caught that was very interesting that's becoming really popular is a 3% health charge for their employees.
What is it?
On the bottom of the menu, it says, we are going to automatically put a 3% charge for the health of our staff. And that money went to the house, meaning to the actual kitchen, because we asked specifically. And that's something that's new that I've actually seen that's been trending.
So that's like, that's 3% separate of
whatever your bill was. There's an extra 3%. That 3% goes to the back of the house to pay their employees.
I mean, I don't know that I'm upset with that, you know, because the truth is, you know, the average person is going to tip, you know, 15 to 25%, right? So,
well, this is like in the fees. So it's like taxes and then a 3%.
My point is, You have a pretty nice spread in there anyway on tip percentile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the 3 points, even if somebody gets aggravated and says, well, yeah, I was going to leave 20. Now you're just going to get 18. It doesn't matter. The server's still going to, you know, walk away with 15. It's fine. I don't see a big deal there.
What about the 3% surcharge on credit cards?
Well, that's another story.
Well, what about this? Since you guys are debating, what about the idea of just raising the prices and covering all of those expenses and letting me pay, you know, if I came in for a $12, let's just say not me. If somebody comes in for a $12 burger and we make that burger $15, isn't that just easier than adding on all these percents? Because
you would normally think that way, but there's a lot of people out there that are comparing other restaurants and be like, well, I can get that. Listen, I just was
that. But isn't that the tip of the iceberg? Once people start doing it, won't it catch on? And then everybody can just actually cover their costs and the price of their goods?
You would think that. But like I went to the hotel and I was reading their menu. It was $23 for a normal burger. And I said something to some people that were at the event that I was at. I'm like, you can go right down the street. It's $12. So, I mean, there you see the one hand that the hotel is overcharging.
If it's a gouge, it's not going to work. What I mean by gouge,
right,
what I mean by
gouge is savvy.
Right. A lot of the some of the corporate establishments, right? They're, you know, they'll kind of just like, all right, let's just throw it in there. We're going to charge it.
And there's a business model though. You can walk into a little mom and pop place that's the size of a place that we're sitting in right now, and you can see that the burger is not going to need to cost $23.50. But if you walk into a place where you look around and you're like, God, the rent here has got to be $10,000 a month, and that's before I pay any insurance. It's before I pay the mortgage on my bar. It's before I pay, you know, any of my employees. Then all of a sudden you're like, okay, a burger here could cost $23.50.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously you're paying for ambiance, you know, you're walking into a place like that. Clearly there's dollars spent. Right. So,
right.
You know, and again, you know, I don't mind if it's worthy, it's good. The problem is if you're getting this burger and that the burger is just not, you have to make it extra.
Nobody's going to come. You know what I mean? I think that that's the way I would see it is that if you charge me, you may get me that one time, but you're never going to get anybody again, right. And then you're out of business.
You're correct. All I'm saying is elevate the product. Whatever, if it's a sandwich, a burger, whatever, elevate it.
How long you been in sales?
Too long.
Right. So, I mean, think about that for a second. If you come out and you've done a tasting on burgers, and since we're talking about that, and you're known for that burger, you're not going to change that burger. But if that burger price goes up that you have to pay for, and you go for, and it goes up substantially, because obviously, you know, that swings a lot, especially if it has short rib and brisket and chuck, that's a huge variance. It starts to swing. You can't fit or maximize the potential for the ROI on that product, especially if you have the 3% and then it goes up and then you're going to put on this percentage, then you're like, all of a sudden this burger goes from $15 you're known for to $18 to $19.
Yeah, once you tack on that 20% surcharge, that was the $23 that I was going to pay for the burger anyway. Right. So just stop making me do math.
Right. I know that, but that's the problem is once you get open and you're established, when you go to raise up your fees,
right,
that's where a lot of people tend to get pissed off. When you're opening up, you still have to, like when we're talking about chicken wings, it's a prime example. I thought I was doing a great job of having my chicken wings at $15 for 10 wings. They were $98 a case. I never expected during COVID chicken wings to go to $200.
Yeah. And people compensated a lot. There were places in town. I did a story that, you know, compensated by basically just raising everything on the menu a tiny bit.
Yeah. But $15, I couldn't at that point.
Yeah. And, but these were places where wings were the, and right, everybody understood it was all over the news and people, maybe people didn't come as much and maybe people just understood this is what it costs now.
Mm-hmm. I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to that. Because for me, it's all still in your same math. Right.
If I was going to pay $14 for the cocktail, charging $15 or $16 is not going to make me not buy the cocktail. I'm not going from zero to 100, you know?
But there's a lot of people out there in the population here. We're talking about people that are in business, that know the business, like us.
Right.
We would, you know, we go, yeah, no problem. I see it. It's the individuals that don't see it, don't understand it because they don't understand economics, and especially in the restaurant industry.
Maybe this helps them learn.
That's what we're trying to do, right? I mean, like, you as a shoemaker, you can make 175% markup. You can't do 175% up markup on a chicken breast. Who's going to spend? Like, I saw chicken breast on menus that were $50.
What are the bar markups? Right. So
drink was $19, well, and all it was an old fashioned, and it was, and
but
it
that's
wasn't
standard.
A good bourbon.
A bottle of wine in a restaurant is double
ridiculous.
Or triple what, but it's always been like that. Yeah. Quadruple. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I'm just thinking about, you'll see it and you know, you're out. So maybe you're willing to pay it, but you look at it and you're like, that bottle of wine costs $17 in Publix.
Santa Margarita is not worth it. You know? No offense, but I see $25 on the shelf and it's like $80 in a restaurant. Like, nope.
But you know, but that's the whole
for
thing.
For somebody like me, I have a fairly high tolerance, right, with alcohol. So, you know, if there's a $20 cocktail, you know, I'm not spending $150.
You just want booze in a glass.
Right. Well, I mean, I have standards, but at the end of the day, like I need more. I'm not going to spend.
So you pregame.
Pregame
before
always.
You go out. Road exactly. Soda.
Yeah. I mean, I don't drive. It's road soda, but I don't drive. So just to be clear on anybody who's listening. Yeah.
But yeah, these are the strategies, right? Mm-hmm. You want to go out, you pregame a little.
All right. Speaking of going out, I don't want to get too far away from Tijuana tacos.
Oh my God. Tijuana tacos. Yes. I just learned what those are. They have a lot of guacamole, which I like.
I'm going to talk about it. This was your article.
Yes. I went to a pop-up that I had heard a lot about, but it was hard. I'd been meaning to go for months, but they only pop up 3-4 times a month because Samuel, the guy who runs the pop-up, he has another job. This is like his side hustle that he's growing. And hopefully by the end of the year, I know that he hopes to have a truck or something more regular and have it, you know, be his full-time gig, but he pops up all over town apartment. He's actually at Onyx Winter Park Apartments tonight. I'll give a shout out, 6 PM until sellout. And they do sell out because what he's making is a very regional taco that they have in Southern California. It's a Tijuana style taco. He's from San Diego. He said that in San Diego, you can walk. They're like 3 minutes apart to get tacos like this. But in Orlando, he says nobody's really doing them this style. And the Southern Californians and transplants and friends, and they're lining up. I got there early when I went. I finally matched up with a date and was to open. I got there at 5:30. I was like, I'll just hang out in my car for a few minutes. So I got out in 15 minutes. There was already 20 people online waiting before he started selling the tacos.
What's the name of the place?
It is Over the Border Taqueria.
Okay.
And you can find them. That is their handle on Instagram. If you follow me on Instagram, you can catch all of this stuff. But my post right this second is a big takeout box of chorizo and asada and pastor tacos from John's over looking. The border taqueria. And yeah, well, he's my photography's not as good as yours, John.
You're not getting graded for that,
but, yeah, but it's good enough.
This is good. The judgment free zone.
Yes, yes.
He only pointed the two of you. Just by the way,
yeah. By the way,
I'm a writer. I'm not a photographer. I've been getting better.
he just got you a thumbs up.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And what I learned about Tijuana tacos is the fire cooking is everything. You know, the smoke, the fire. The trompo, excuse me.
Is this what the difference is between this style and a traditional like street taco? Well, like other, what are the differences?
That they have, it's like a nice corn tortilla. He gets them fresh from a local place, and you throw that on the griddle with a little oil. It gets a little chewy. It has that nice, and it doesn't fall apart, right? Once you throw it on the griddle, it becomes more stable, and it's meat. It's onions and cilantro, and then guac and sauce. So you won't get cheese in there. It's just the meat is the star. The guac really just is so delicious. And it's obviously California, Mexico, avocados. It's a big thing. And he told me he's from San Diego. His father's from Tijuana. Northern Mexican tacos, it's different. Mexico's huge. You go all over from the different states. You get different regions, different spices, different flavors, more seafood, more, you know, vegetables. I just knocked into something, so everybody's shaking their head at me.
I'm just laughing.
Actually, I didn't shake my head at all.
I'm just saying it wasn't me.
In the north, there's a lot of guacamole. Right. And they really show it up. If you see the post, you'll see it's beautiful and green. And the sauce, that he makes the sauce himself. He marinates the meat for the pastor himself. And he sets it up and he sells out every time.
Yeah, so. But you need to say how he cooks that pastor because he's actually doing it the right way.
Yes, he's got the trompo set up. I'm so bad, my accent. And it's fire cooked. It rotates on the vertical spit. This is something that was brought to Mexico by immigrants many, many moons ago. You see them in Mexico City all the time from the Middle East. And it's something that was picked up and now it's very Mexican. This is sort of like the kolache conversation that
we had
earlier, which is Czech immigrants in Texas brought this pastry and now it's Texan, you know? So now this is a very Mexican taco, but it didn't start that way. It started with immigrants.
Yeah. So if you remember, we had that conversation where the Yido Doner started. It's actually from the Bedouins. Everything was cooked as they were moving. They would, you know, slaughter the animal. They would put it on a spit and they would marinate it and they would use different forms of it. So the pineapple, when it got into Mexico, pineapple was used as a tenderizer because that is one of the things that pineapple does. And so does papaya. And they would layer fat and beef and lamb, and that's how they became doner or gyro. When I saw the picture instantly, it's kind of the same thing. They're using ground meat, and then you add the fat in. So he's controlling how much of that is, and then you can actually spice the meat the way you want it. So you're getting this beautiful thing. So as the meat is going around in a circle, the heat is coming, and it's stacked height-wise. As far as the heat is going. So as it's cooking, it's spinning at the same time, and the fat is rendering down as it's cooking. It's causing the caramelization almost instantly to kind of have a crust on the meat. So the Maillard reaction happens really quick, and it's really juicy because the amount of fat they have in there, and it's delicious. And it's not only just for Mexican, like the Al Pastor, it's actually every single pretty much every single society around the world has done something that started from the Bedouins because it's been with different cultures mixing together from, you know, wars or whatever. They kind of take what they want and they look at that and go, hey, that's great. Let's do it over here.
I want to bet and win too. So here's what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. We have not done tacos. I don't remember doing tacos. Right.
The nice thing about tacos, though, is you can revisit them and make them anything.
Oh, no. You know? I want to revisit them next week. So that's what I'm saying. Okay. Like for next week.
Did you not see that we had a thing come through the text messages? They want to do minis.
Yeah, we can do minis. Food. We can do mini food. Okay. They're very cute. Oh, that's what I said. That's what I did as a joke.
We did actually do tacos. We did it for the October event for the chefs and the PR stuff. We did it at Salimar. One of the dishes I did was a pulled chicken taco.
I don't remember that.
Of course you don't, because you've eaten other things since then.
I eat a lot.
We have not done a full spread.
He's like the Dory of eating. Like, it's just the last thing he ate.
That's it.
He's like a goldfish.
Oh, look, a castle. I didn't see that. Oh, look.
It's a castle. Piece of candy. Piece of candy. Piece of candy. I don't think we've done full-blown, like, sopas and like a street taco. Well, yeah. I mean, like, how deep do you want to go down the rabbit hole?
Pretty deep. I want to go far. Like, what's up, Doc? You know what I'm saying? That far, that deep.
Okay.
Yeah. The hell are we talking about?
You want lingua or no?
Oh, I do.
What do you call me?
Cabeza, lengua. Let's do all that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Claro, clarito.
All right.
Yeah.
Because I can go real deep. That's why I'm like, how deep you want to go? I can also do tripa if you want, but yeah. I know you don't like that.
No.
See, do the lengua then.
All right.
I love that.
Let's do it.
All right. So we need beef tongue.
So I'm here next week.
Okay.
Doing the show.
I want to smoke the beef tongue. There's nothing like, if you've never had smoked beef tongue, you've not eaten properly.
It I is have amazing. Memories of being Where's a the kid. I used to love the tongue sandwiches from the deli.
And but that was cured, right?
Yeah, but it was like corned beef, you
know? Right, exactly.
That's and it's sliced, so it just looks like deli meat. And, you know, it was called a tongue sandwich. I was little, but I just figured, oh, that's just what they call it. And then one day I was just kind of idling by the deli case and I spotted it and I was like, oh, it's like, it's really tongue. Still ate it, yeah. But... You know, it was my learning experience.
So, yeah.
It's a real tongue.
We actually did one at my restaurant where we actually made blue flour masa corn style tortillas. And we smoked chocolate, like mole, made mole from scratch, and smoked the beef tongue in that.
I'm willing to do...
lengua tacos are so good.
Yeah, of course you're willing. You're not making it.
If they're good. Well, the thing with lengua is it can get chewy. Uh-huh. You have to cook it right. It's a different kind of a muscle.
Shouldn't be the one to do this.
Well, my point is that you can have a bad experience with it if you don't get it well.
Any food, right? Yeah. Any food, you can have a bad experience. But like tripa is the same way. Tripa, you can look at it and be like, oh, there's no way I'm going to have
it's
that.
It's like calamari.
Yeah, look at him shaking his head.
It's something that just if you, you know, you can, it'll go chewy very easily if you don't do it right.
I do like the honeycomb better than the other one. There's two types of tripe, but the one that I don't like is the thicker one. I'll slice that down and actually marinate that a little bit more so it's a little bit softer. But the one that you and I I've
so
done
you should
it.
Make that because he won't eat it and then I'll get some.
There you go. That's a way for you guys to get
look
some
at his face. Did you see that one?
Strategery.
Yeah, that's strategic thinking. Strategery. I like it. Yeah. I'm not into tripe. My family, you know, growing up, you know, they made it. I just not for me.
Attention chefs and food buyers. Are you looking to improve your proteins program with quality and service by the best in the beef business? Reach out to Peninsula Food Service. With 25 butchers on staff, their services will dazzle you and impress your dining guests. Peninsula is the largest Creekstone farm distributor in the Southeast United States. Let the gang at Peninsula Food Service cut your beef burdens away and ask about their dry-aged program. Look them up at peninsulafood.com.
Okay. So, but you don't want to do all tacos. You want to do like Mexican food though.
Yeah. Not just.
Should see fry. Ryan wants to come on for that one. I can cook for Ryan Manning.
Oh my God.
Okay. Bring him.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know where he's working now, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah. He's a great guy.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I do. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. This is great. I can socialize, work, eat all right here.
I'll have to reach out to Ryan.
Amy. Do you not see what we're building here?
I'm here.
Has it?
Ryan studied.
It clicks, right? Like get him on. Let's do this.
Yeah, you know, Ryan studied in Mexico for a long time.
Yes.
Do you know what's better than one chef?
Two. We can spoil the stock.
Right. Yeah. Let's make.
Well, we might as well have Alejandra come in from Mexico City because she can make tamales. And there, she made tamales, and she's wrecked me. I can never eat tamales again.
Welcome to the table. I'm for all of this. I'm for <fine. laughs> Everybody's cooking. I'm eating the food.
Oh, you're like Carl.
I don't have food fatigue today. I don't get
food fatigue.
No, Carl never gets food. By the way, that was John.
Yeah, that was John making some reference there.
That you never stop eating.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, listen, I enjoy... I was, you know, so before everybody arrived here today, John and I were having a conversation, and I made it clear to him that I really enjoy these days. Not just for the food I'm getting fed, but it's just like it's the whole camaraderie. We're having a great time. It's the cooking, the picture, the whole thing, man. It's just this is a fun day.
It
is. And the older you get, the it just seems like that window of fun days like really shrinks, right? So you want to really grab onto what you got, you know, when you can get it. And that's, you know.
Wait, Amy, and the rest of the listeners, I'm going to call something out. He texted me on my way, and I had pulled up, and he goes, I texted you because I was really starving. No, seriously, I'm really hungry. I was wondering when you were going to get here. He just lied.
Are you bringing food? Like, are you picking something up on the way that I can eat while you're cooking me other things to eat?
Wow. Okay, guys. You know,
I like slept 2 hours in like 40 something hours in period, and I walk up and I'm exhausted. He's like, hey, I'm kind of hungry.
It's cute. You're needed. You're needed and loved and appreciated.
I appreciate it.
From a mensch.
I appreciate you. You complete me.
Okay. Now get in the kitchen.
Exactly.
Put on your apron. What are you talking about?
Get in the kitchen and complete me.
All right. So how do we find our friend over at the taco place?
Oh, Over the Border. You can follow them. The best place is probably Instagram. Follow them on the social, Over the Border Taqueria with the Q. And you can follow me, Amy Drew, AMYDROO on Instagram. And you'll be connected to all of the things that I'm writing about, including Samuel from Over the Border. And like I said, tonight is their last pop-up of the month. So if you're in Winter Park, and if you have nothing going on and you want some good tacos, get there for 6 p.m. to sell out. Get there early. I would say at least 15 minutes early. If you can, get there at 5:30, linger, hang out. It's a good time. They're cooking. And get some tacos.
Does he do elote as well?
He does mulitas and he does quesadillas. And that's it.
And then tacos. That's pretty much
and
it.
And tacos.
And what are the types of meats?
When I went, it's asada, which is steak. Chorizo, which is sausage, and the pastor, which is pork. And everything, you know, has like a lot of, the marinades are a little different, but everything has that nice, beautiful achiote red.
Yeah.
The asada has that real grilled flavor.
The char, right?
Yeah, char, you can't, you know.
Yeah, you can't replicate that.
Yeah, it's wood or charcoal, you know, sometimes a combo.
Yeah, we were talking when we were in Austin, somebody was asking a question about tandoor. Can you cook tandoor or even char, what you're talking about, in a combi oven? And we're like, absolutely not. First of all, you can't get a combi oven up past 500. Second off, you're just not going to have that char, that wood flavor that you want on it. You're only going to get that with a grill or some other type of, you know, even.
And that's what he said. He said, when people tell me that this was one of the things, he's like, people say, oh, this place, it's the best asada I ever had. And then I go there and they're cooking it on the flat top. And he's like, that's
frying food, by the way.
He's like, that's not really asada.
Yeah.
So
it's funny how we think we're doing something authentic and we're not paying really good props to the food, the cuisine itself. We're not showing respect to the cuisine.
That was not authentico.
No. That wasn't authentico either.
I know.
I've been chased away from the word authentic, but I can tell you that he said that's, you know, not the right way to do it. It has to have.
Well, just for the record, so my wife is Hispanic, she's Cuban, and growing up in Miami, I used to have conversational skills, and you know, and I can pronounce just fine. But since being married and children and everyone, I just kind of like tune out when I get home now. And I go out of my way.
This is what he meant about how he has less fun days.
This is pointing to it. But I go out of my way now.
Does she still listen?
No, nobody listens. It's a house of nobody listening. The kids, nobody listens. But I got my way to overpronounce in the most whitey white boy way. every Spanish word. I do it on purpose. It's for kicks. I'm just saying.
Like gran masala or marsala,
right?
Or cardamom.
Sometimes I hit it right, and sometimes I don't.
It's all right. We're still
learning. You know what?
My dad was fluent. He lived in Cuba for a few years.
Remember, he
was in the restaurant business, and so he was never home. So I had nobody speaking Spanish to me.
I think the word tortilla. I think people need to really accentuate that because it's probably the most. It tortilla. It's like such a sexy word, you know, for food. So when people are talking about tortillas, they should be like, hey, da-da-da-da-da, tortilla. Boom. It's like, oh, my God, I want whatever that is, I want to have it.
But there's so many different aspects when we're dealing, because we're talking about taquitos or tacos. But sopas, that's life-changing if you actually, because it's the small little ring and it has a divot in
if
it.
If you get it with like the masa, like fresh, really good.
You know, if I didn't have to go home, we would be going to go check your buddy out in Orlando.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But you can get that. We'll talk about masa again and who's doing it right in Orlando, because, you know, it's like there's heirloom masa being made.
If people are wondering, by the way, Amy, I just want to be clear. Amy Drew Thompson is going to be bringing you, the audience, the hottest, baddest places in the Central Florida, Orlando area. Okay? So you need to tune in. I'm
so
going to... Yeah.
Tortilla.
Tortilla. Everyone has to have a tortilla. But going forward, we're going to get a little, we're going to get forward on the schedule, right? And I want to be able to publish the schedule. This way people can come in and tune in when they know you're on.
It's fear of missing out.
FOMO.
As the kids say.
Yeah. By the way, I know a guy that's actually growing Jimmy Redcorn.
I'm sorry?
Jimmy Redcorn. I know a guy that's cooking or growing it.
Oh, yeah? Of course it's you.
It's an heirloom.
Yeah.
That somebody had a picture. Was it you that had a picture of the red corn or somebody else on my Facebook?
I had pictures not that recently of like beautiful white, yellow, blue, red. I mean, they looked like gemstones. It looked like jewelry.
So you want to go what an heirloom corn masa meat? What is
that? These are varieties of corn that grew in Mexico in the way, way back that are being cultivated by family farms and brought back. In ways, some of them never left, some of them are being brought back, and there are companies, this is not straight out of my current wheelhouse, so I don't have it right there at my fingertips, but there are a couple of companies that are importing these heirloom corns, through a single
distributor,
thank you, that supports these particular family farms in Mexico, keeps them growing these things, supports the families.
So these are not been altered, genetically modified. They're not genetically modified. Enrico Olivar, he's from Central in Mexico. He's the one that kind of reinvigorated the actual heirloom corn because it was being killed off because of the GMO corn that's being brought into that Mexico. So he's actually got with farmers that in different level elevations of mountains that have different types of corn growing that could be that same blue species or Jimmy red corn that could be in one part of Mexico, but as it goes up into elevation and or soil, it could be different. So you can actually have that same heirloom corn, but tasting different because of where the region it's coming from, just like San Manzano tomatoes and the regular
coffee,
tomatoes.
Coffee. Yeah, anything. Exactly. Yeah, that's
wine. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's not all natural when you're talking, that's an organic. What she's talking about is from one, it's organic, so it can't be generally genetically modified, so on and so forth. So
and
it's
there's
better
so
for
many
you.
Varieties, yeah. Shades of red, shades of blue. It's different. You can put like three or four different colors. It's the same color. And then you see that they're different, larger kernel, smaller kernel.
Walk and Talk Podcast, now sweetened by Noble Citrus. Bite into a juicy crunch tangerine, 40 years perfected, seedless and oh so tasty. Or savor a starburst pomelo, the giant citrus with a unique zing. Don't miss autumn honey tangerines, big and easy to peel. Noble, generations of citrus expertise, delivering exceptional flavor year-round. Taste the difference with Noble Citrus.
Like that.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, that really amps me up because it gives that flavors and not only flavor, but it gives you color on the plate. So you're doing something that's totally different. And John just got amped up because I said color because he loves different colors on the plates.
Oh my gosh. Those make for great photography. I'll show you guys a story that I did a while back.
I want to hear back from the audience. If I think What I really want to do is to have a photography focused, food focused podcast one day episode. To where
that's what we were doing.
No. To talk about it.
Oh, you mean you're going to have someone like him talk?
Yeah, I would like to have some topic on food photography. Yeah, him, not me. I'm not a photographer. He is. I mean, I'm an iPhone photographer.
I did a story on that a couple years back. The camera eats first.
We were just saying it the entire week. Every time, camera eats first.
Yep.
Every time.
That's brilliant. Yeah, I've never heard that before. Brilliant.
Think about it. When you go out to dinner next time.
I just gave you the props on it, you two. Yeah.
But no, think about when you go out now. You're going to see it all the time. You're going to see it in your back.
I never heard of it. Anyway, you guys, this is a tough room, I tell you.
No, what I'm saying is now you're going to think about it all the time when you see people doing that.
Yeah. Camera eats first. Actually, I eat first.
I still feel like a tool taking pictures of my food in a restaurant. Even though everybody does it, I feel like I've said that everybody who's listening to this who knows me, she always says that. I do. I still feel like an idiot taking pictures in a restaurant. I feel like I should just be appreciating the food, but that's what I do.
You are really appreciating the food because you're taking a picture of the art.
That's a nice way. I still feel dorky taking my camera out and taking pictures, getting up, moving the plates around. Got to sit by the window. The light's good.
All right, I don't go that far, but yeah.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. No, John's nodding at me because this is one of the things that I learned when I did that story with people who are really, really good at taking food pictures because I needed to up my game.
Well, I'm here for this whole thing.
He just wants to eat the food.
I do. Well, you know what? I want to take pictures. Well, I want John to take pictures of the food. I want you to cook it. I want to eat it. And I get to talk about it.
Well, I want to do a better job when I'm doing Instagram or any of these posts, because that's what people see, right? Yes. They see the tacos and they go, oh, God, I want that, right?
Honestly, I'm so, I'm on 12 different, social media platforms. And I see, whether it's the guest or the chef, I see these pictures. They're horrible. But when you take a picture, you have to know what it looks like.
I know when it's bad.
But they post them anyway, and I don't get it. And sometimes I want to have a cocktail and I reach out to that person. I'd be like, look.
Yeah, can you drunk dial them?
Yeah,
and give them photo drunk text. Critiques.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. And this happened to me. Keith and I were talking about what you're saying. You have to have the support group around you that will say, hey, you know what? You can do better.
Friends don't let friends post that.
Yeah. Right. When you're walking out of the house, you're like, maybe do like the last mirror check before I leave. And do I look like, poop or not? That's the same thing with the plate. Is that too busy? Is it this? When you're doing things and you don't have people around you that are going to question you in the right proper way, I have to point that out. That can say to you, hey, you're better than that. I know you are. This is, what about this texture? What about that texture? You can learn from one another.
You're saying that I shouldn't reach out to somebody and be like, hey, Schmendrick, like, what are you doing?
Well, you can, but here's the thing. Why? You've got to give them, hey, let me show you what we do. Here are things that we can do, and this is what level you should be at, and how do we get you from where you are now to here?
So what you're saying is we would go and say, hey, let me show you what we do so you can, go jump off a bridge. No, man, come on, because they're never going to match what we do, dude. We're kind of a big deal.
I know, but you're still trying to help people.
Yes.
And you're still trying to call out, and if they don't know they're doing wrong, then how do they ever know?
I'm taking a newspaper and wrap it against their nose. You know what I mean?
Well,
roll it up. stop it.
You still have to do it in the right way. The bottom line is you still have to have a support group that you can count on and say, hey, does this look poop?
I feel like there's got to be more to it than that, because like I said earlier, when you have a crappy picture, how can you still post it?
Some people don't think it's a crappy picture, though. The problem. And I'm going to throw this out, and I know he's going to nod the head. No one should be taking a crappy picture with the quality of cameras that are in phones right now. No excuse.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. Well, I have to buy this. No, you don't. You have a $1,200 phone that has a pixel camera, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's true.
You just learn how to, you need to learn how to use it. That's bottom
true.
Line.
That is true. I have an old cruddy phone and I could learn how to use it better. I could. It does not, it may not be like the current camera, but for what it was then, I could absolutely do a better job with what I have.
You know, the first thought question
there's
would be
so
like,
so much
is,
to do.
Right. Is that an iPhone 8? No, you need to upgrade to an iPhone 14. I can, that I'd say yes.
It's an iPhone 6.
Right. Well, yeah,
I have the Android equivalent of an iPhone 8.
Okay. You need to upgrade.
Yeah. You need to switch companies altogether.
I'm like a real journalist, not a TV journalist. Right, people listen. I don't have the money for that.
Because John doesn't talk, right? Composition is really important. Lighting is really important.
Oversaturation, not so important. Carl.
Stay away from the saturation.
Carl.
I do that for him. I don't think I'm pretty.
Shout out. You could just eat all your meals at Doshi in Orlando where you cannot take a bad picture. I swear to God, whoever designed the lighting in there was like, make it perfect for everybody's Instagram. Every single picture I took in there with this crummy camera was like, I mean, I shudder to think what you could have done in there, because every single picture that I took was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, but when John goes to dinner, he brings like his whole studio. He brings like, you know, big lights and, you know,
the ring and the this.
Yeah, he brings everything when he goes out to eat.
I need to remember to do that.
That's what real photographers do. They bring all of their studio equipment
usually
to the table.
I'm just like, hey, I took you out to dinner. Can you shine your camera light on my plate?
You know, it's funny. That's where I was going with that. Do you remember Tampa Food Mom was there at our event, and she actually had a mini camera or a mini light that she said, John, hold the camera. Not that John, her husband, hold that up. And she put the light over it so she can take the proper picture. So when you're into it, they're going to do the right thing.
I have one of those now.
Right?
I just forget to bring it with me.
It's a whole rig.
It was a Christmas gift, so yeah, I have to remember to bring it.
It's not even. It's this little. It looks like a beeper.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, and it's just a light, and they hold it up, and then boom.
John's
got one.
Yeah, of course he does.
Explain what a beeper is for the people who are younger than us, please.
It was.
Do you want anybody younger than 50 to listen to this podcast?
Just bypass. Just drop it. Just move on.
I just realized what I said.
Goodness gracious.
Beeper.
All right.
You didn't call it a pager. Pager.
Wow. Paging Dr. Love. No,
well, that's what they would have thought of. Oh, why are they talking about pagers? Beeper.
Beeper.
They probably thought the Muppet. Me.
Oh, wow.
It's Beaker, right. By the way.
Everybody just, I can see collectively everybody switching off the podcast right now.
No, they're probably wondering, like, he's really tired.
Everybody they're Googling Beeper.
Beeper is trending. That's like, okay. Wow. All right. I think we hit the wall. Okay. So Amy Drew Thompson, when we get off air, we're going to talk about when you're going to come back.
Thought we were having tacos next week.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay.
That's when she wants to come back is next week.
I want to come back for tacos.
I'll be here. I'm here. Yeah.
They're playing you out.
Go ahead and give your Instagram again.
Follow me on Instagram, yes. At Amy Drew. It is AMYDRO00, because my name was taken and double O's are cute.
Indeed. And the name of our taco friend?
Over the Border Taqueria, also on Instagram, and you can find him elsewhere too.
Don't forget to vote, right? It's voting going on.
That's right. Orlando Sentinel Foodie Awards. Make your vote count.
Eat the vote, baby. Eat the vote, right? Eat the vote. I mean, like, rock the vote, but no? Like,
oh, wow. No? See, that was... Stick with the veal, bro.
Next round, we'll get here for the nominations phase, and then maybe we can shake some things up.
Oh, yeah. Everybody, thank you kindly. Check out Chefs. Check out Peninsula Food Service in Central Florida. You must do it. We are out.
Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.